Live from the Arabian Horse Show in Scottsdale, Arizona. We are at Westworld. This is a beautiful day. This is a special edition of Practical Business Solutions starring Jim Hyten. Jim, this is amazing out here.
This is an incredible show.
Wow.
It's an incredible show. The Scottsdale Arabian Horse Show is probably one of the two major shows. And here comes our first guest on this show.
This is great, but the weather is just beautiful for a show. And, of course, it's been going on for a few days and it's going to still continue for a week or two.
Well, we'll talk more about the show.
Yeah.
And it goes for 10 days out here, and it's quite a operation.
Oh, it is indeed.
But
Let's see. Joining us right now, Jeff Shaw from Shada. Jeff, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you, gentlemen. Good to be here with you today.
This is great, and I'll bring it back to you, Jim, because you know all about the Arabian Horse Show.
Well, we really appreciate Jeff being on the show and accommodating us and being able to broadcast here. Jeff is like everybody else here at the show. They've got a schedule of where they have to be, when. They got five rings going, you know, every day for almost 10 days. So I know he's really accommodated us and given us a few minutes. But, Jeff, you know, Shada is one of the leading training operations in the United States. You're one of the people that's renowned as one of the real halter guys out there. I mean, tell us a little bit about, you know, how did you get into this business and you know, what do you all do at Shada?
Well, our latest advertising and promotional piece that we put out, we entitled 29 Years and Counting, and so it represents the 29 years that professionally we've run our organization. The Shada name originated as Shada Arabian Stables, and then one day my dad thought that maybe that should be spiced up a little, not just to be an ordinary stable, so we actually were Shada Arabian Sanction, kind of a mouthful on some levels, three words there, and we went under that umbrella for about 20 years, and then kind of streamlining things and creating our brand identity. By that point, we were really kind of known as Shada, so now we're known as, or people refer to us as that. We're actually a small corporation, so we're Shada Inc. formally. The Shada stands for Sheila and Dave, which is to give honor to my mom and dad for them having a vision of Arabian horses.
That's great.
We had 13 of them at one time as a small breeder, and so that was really, you know, really in our blood. We had them as kids, and my brother and I, on some level, basically got hooked on the horses. My brother probably more so hooked on the amount of ladies that liked horses, and that allowed him to, you know, be able to meet and greet. We used to joke that he worked the hospitality side of things up in the front of the stalls,
yeah,
and I would work the side of things in the back behind the curtains that were the horses. And then, but we are a really good team. You know, there's a lot of stories. There's been stories written about our farm over the last 29 years, and they're genuine stories. They're stories that tell it like it is, which is, you know, life is a journey, and we're doing it together. And it has its, you know, its speed bumps here and there, but we come flourishing through all of it. And we're one of the farms that people come to this horse show and can't wait to see the horses we bring. Can't wait to see, you know, what our stall decorations are going to look like. We have a different look every year. This year we went with kind of a column look that our people that are listening to us can't see, but if they come down to the horse show, they'll get a chance to check it out.
Now, where are you located? Where is the farm located?
Our town is Elk River, Minnesota, and that's a suburb of Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Okay.
We're a northwest suburb. We're about 35 minutes from downtown and about 50 minutes from the airport.
Right.
So Minnesota, you know, I'm sort of curious about that. Does weather have anything to do with where you would breed horses? I know you do the halter stuff, which is really the non-performance type, but does weather have anything to do with it? Is it better in Scottsdale, Minnesota, worldwide? Is there a climate that's conducive?
Well, it's a great question, and certainly a winter climate in up north and inclusive of Minnesota is not conducive. So what you do is you know that you cannot count on the elements. If the elements provide nice at all, especially through the winter, then that's a bonus. But you have to have facilities that you do the controlling yourself. create your own atmosphere, your own temperature, and those type of things. So we do that. We do have, you know, a wonderful 8 months typically, inclusive of three seasons that we love, which is spring, summer, and fall. And winter are the, is the season that we endure. But our barn is heated to 70 degrees, the temperature that most people keep their homes. So we simulate kind of the perfect health temperature for them. They still have to wear blankets, so as to keep those nice shiny short hair coats that you see in the show arena on these beautiful animals that are competing. And we have lights that simulate the long hour lights of the longest day of summer, 16 hour of lights, 300 watts per stall. They say that you want to be able to read a newspaper in any corner of the stall, holding it at chest level easily, and then that means you're getting enough illumination in the stall to simulate sunlight. And so we do those extra things, and so we're able to and bring then here to the valley from Minnesota a product that looks like we've already been here for 3-4 months. Now, there are a lot of people that do choose to be here for 3-4 months, myself included at one time. My family owned a farm down here for 4 years, and we have subleased a lot of different environments over the years, going all the way back to Mr. Tom Chauncey when we leased from him for 6 years. We were the only outside people to ever lease from Mr. C, and had many a dinner on his back porch and had some wonderful times with him. And so we have done, we've done it a variety of different ways. The last couple of years we've chosen to come just directly to the show grounds once it opens with our 16 to 18 horses for competition. That's kind of what's changed a little bit with that mindset, is we're just bringing the few that are ready, that that we know will be competitive, where in the past when you set up a satellite camp or a winter camp down here, you end up taking on a lot of horses in pursuit of which ones will get there or make it in their readiness. And so it's a little different concept, but it's worked out good the last couple of years for us to do it that way. And but you know, each year is changing. You got to listen to the needs of the people and your client base and what is important. But this is definitely a real hot area, and it's a real place to be from basically January 1st, probably through about the middle of April, when the show in Las Vegas called the World Cup actually ends. And then at that point, in an odd way, it probably becomes a little bit less of a hotbed, because then the role reversal of what we're talking about weather-wise happens, and it gets quite steamy here. And so then the other parts of the country become the more place to be, and thus northern or the northern hemisphere, the Minnesota is a beautiful place starting about April.
I know that one of the things, Jeff, that you do in training halter horses, that you're one of the people that people want to bring their horse to you to train it. How many horses do you bring here that are for other people, and how many are your own horses? Is there a mix that you have? Or
yeah, that's a superb question. Our thing from day one, and this was hard for us because, as I had said to or alluded to, we had 13 of our own horses. When we decided to start a service center, and we took this take on it, and that was we were going to do it strictly for our clients. Ownership was going to be theirs. Sales would be strictly for them. We would not be an in-house competition of sorts. We wouldn't own our own. So we sold what we had and pared those down quite quickly over 6 months and started to do that. And we have really lived and abided by that basically on 100% scale, until as of recently, my brother has a partner, and they have a daughter together, and so her name is Anissa, and my wife Roxanne. Those ladies love the performance side of things, and so they desire to have a horse or two to do that with. And so we have that in-house, and we have that we enjoy, but that's not in direct competition with our clients, because we're not a performance training center. We're a halter and breeding and marketing right. center. And so, but, you know, it's nice. These horses do go on to do other things, some of them someday down the road, and we have a real feel for what that takes and what they look like and what kind of mentality they have to be able to do that. And so we also are known on a small level for our horses that have been trained by us to have the smarts and the capacity to go on and be a performance horse. So that's a good reputation to have. But the halter is our thing, and it's what burns in my heart and in my family's heart. And we stand each year a couple of the premier stallions in the breed. And they have outstanding babies that then come in and, you know, for the most part come through us for evaluation and marketing. And so it, you know, really starts with the people you're associated with and how spectacular their breeding programs are and the success that you're going to have as a team.
That's great. That's great. Well, the other thing I was thinking about is that, I know that you accept owners that bring horses to you for training. And, I mean, it almost seems like you have to do a lot of evaluation. I know you can look at their pedigree and, all the horses that have been in their line, but you still have to evaluate them. I mean, that's got to be a tough job to know whether that yearling is somebody you want, a horse you want to take, and then spend the time and the effort and train it.
Yeah.
That's got to be an interesting evaluation of whether this is a horse you take or not.
Well, when I was young, I was actually maybe ahead of my time in this quote that I came up with, or this mindset, and that was that I firmly believe that a success story of a horse, regardless of discipline, but in particular the one that we're a part of and that we're talking about, is 50% their confirmation, what they look like physically, how God created them, and 50% the attitude and willingness that they have to make the most out of those gifts that they have.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, every month, I think back to that and I think how close that is. It really is how they look for one and then how they're willing to apply that to what it is you're asking them to do. And so attitude is so much, and you don't know that by strictly looking at them. You have to have some time under the belt. You don't usually need a year, but you need a couple, 2-3 months to see if this horse is, of the right mindset where it's going to respond the right way. You know, our halter world, we like horses that are responsive. We like horses that react to stimulus. That's what makes them special in our world. You go into some of the other disciplines and you want them a little less responsive or a little less reactionary. And so, it depends on how they think, if they're slow thinkers, if they're quick to react. And yet, what's really important to know is we have an amazingly smart breed, and they do so many things well. They're actually coined the versatile horse in that they do so many things well. And so, they can get a little stereotype of being overreactive or, the buzzword of crazy. And you'll find that on occasion, but very rare. It is not nearly as much as what, some people like to pretend it is. But if you're in the breed, you deal with them daily. You just know how lucky we are to be around these horses day in and day out.
You know, it sounds like you're almost describing human beings, too, from an attitude standpoint.
Yeah, living creatures.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, it's really interesting, and I don't know a lot about horses, raving horses or whatever, but how much is the skill set, like your skill set, and other trainers, how important is that to get a horse that may not work, but the skill of the trainer can make it work?
Well, we have undoubtedly some of the most amazing trainers in the world of equine, of horses, period, because we have trainers in every discipline that have actually, they're true specialists. I mean, they can bring the best out in every horse. Now, the best may not be enough to be a national champion if the horse isn't gifted or isn't put together just the right way, but they will make that horse the best they can be. It's interesting in that a lot of the other breeds, the breeds are designed specifically to do a task, and they really just get on them and just allow them to do the task. They don't actually truly teach them these skills, and so it is incredible. And what we also has happened is we used to have a variety of this, back to the versatile Arabian. Well, we used to have a lot of versatile trainers that did some of them each and every discipline with the horses. But as it has evolved and become so specific, so specialized, and so unbelievably competitive that people usually teach or take or decide to really specialize in a discipline or two maybe. And
wow.
There's still a couple of guys that do a few more and are still amazing at it because they learned it so well in the first place, the John Randenbergs of the world, just amazing horsemen and women. And so there are some of those. But for the most part, those of us that have, that are in it now and making a living and making a difference in it, we specialize in one or two disciplines at best. And so for us, it's a discipline of, they call them in-hand breeding horses that we used to refer to as halter horses. And so halter's still fun to refer to them that way. And so that's what we do. Then we do the breeding part and the advising part and the marketing. It's amazing. You go like on a final night here at the Scottsdale Show on a Friday night, Saturday night, you'll see eight classes run that are highlighting them in eight different ways, from halter up through jumping, you know, to English, to Western and hunter and driving and all these things. And they do each and every one just so amazingly gorgeous. It's unreal. It's like you can see anywhere else from any other breed, because those breeds are specific to the singular one or two things they do, not the variety of things that that the Arabian horse does.
Do your horses all have different personalities?
Oh, yeah, they do. I mean,
is that right?
Very much so.
Yeah.
And the neat part is I know what those personalities are, because if you want to go so far as to say that I'm in the top tier of halter guys in the breed.
We'll go so far
so,
to say that.
Okay, let's do that for sake of conversation. That's flattering. You don't have to. What I do is I want to know those horses inside and out.
Yeah.
So I probably travel a little less around the world than some, but I see my horses 6 to 7 days a week and know them and greet them. And whether I get a chance to spend 1 minute with them or 30 minutes with them, I know where they're at that day. I know what mood they're in. I know if they're feeling good by how readily they're eating their hay and grain. And I'll go to church on a Sunday morning, and afterwards I head to the barn, because it's not a Sunday. It's not a complete day of rest. It's a day for giving thanks and then going on and seeing how the horses are doing. And, you know, some days, Sundays they'll come and they'll have a belly ache, and because you're there, you were able to find that,
yeah,
notice it early, get a little attention to it, and it's all behind you within 24 hours. So that's what we pride ourselves, is making our horses the priority, and then the rest of the traveling and all the other things that we attempt to do, that's in addition to it, but it doesn't come first.
I have a two-part question. One is, do your horses, the best of the best, know they're competing, number one, or do you get a sense that they know that? And do they step up like some, you know, like in athletics? And have you ever had the Wayne Gretzky of horses, meaning someone so far apart from any other horse you've ever seen that you'd like to talk about?
Yep. So it sounds great. So you do know. You know within, like I say, that first 3 to 6 month window whether you're going to have an achiever. And then there's so much as to even say that there are some overachievers. And so in 1996, I'm going back a little bit, I'm dating, but to answer your question of the Wayne and Gretzky of the Arabian horse world, I was lucky enough to be chosen to be a trainer for a stallion named WN Ultimate Star. And the WN stands for the breeder Wayne Newton. And Wayne sold that horse to a partnership of four people. They became the Ultimate Star Guild and chose to call me and send the horse to my brother and I and our training center and our team. And so in 1996, I debuted with that horse here in Scottsdale. It wasn't his first show he had ever been to. Actually, if I tell you the whole story, he had been to the Scottsdale the year before and did not get a placing. 1 year later, different guidance, different ownership, more maturity, more advancement. He was a refined, maybe somewhat even feminine stallion, which paid dividends now, as you'll hear the remainder of the story. But so maybe that's why he didn't do as strong as he should have the year prior. But I remember seeing him and saying, that's one of the most beautiful horses I've ever seen. So I generated the interest and some of the enthusiasm in the purchase. And then because of that, they decided to follow through and let me help them. So we graced the arena here at Scottsdale in 96. He won the H Stallion class, went on to be the unanimous champion stallion of the show. So fast forward, he then bred 100 mares that summer, and then, which now many of his daughters, he did not create a son really that became his heir apparent, but he did create daughters that are treasured worldwide. So I'm really jumping forward now and telling you about the horse as a breeding horse, but we'll talk more about him as a show horse because he actually was both. So he went to the Canadian Nationals then in August of that same year, and went national champion there with a three-judge system unanimously. So now that's six judges that have said he's the best. And then he went on to the U.S. Nationals that fall, and there were five judges at that time, and he was unanimous national champion. So that was at the time considered our Triple Crown, the show in Las Vegas. The World Cup show didn't exist. So that was our Arabian version of the Triple Crown, like you hear of and we follow in the racehorse world. And so that horse did that, and he did it unanimously, and it had never been done, nor has been done since, that a singular horse stallion has won the Triple Crown, and all judges have used him first. So I was a part of that. Wayne Newton was chosen breeder of the year then that subsequent year based on the success of that horse. And then tried to hire me and all kinds of other fun stuff, and I already had my stakes in Minnesota with my family, so that was nice. I spent the weekend in Las Vegas, but that was that. So,
well, I know, Jeff, you've got different times here that you have to be in places. So if you have to go,
my team is starting to circle. We've got five in a row that are five classes in a row that we're going to be showing in here this afternoon. We've been actually looking forward to it all week. It's going to be one of our really good afternoons, and so we'll go. My group is getting the final details, but if Jeff's not there, they seem to have a meltdown.
Right.
I'll finish with this little cute little story. We have so my wife and my assistant have coined the expression WWJD, which in the real world of things, that stands for What Would Jesus Do? But at Shada, it actually stands for What Would Jeff Do? And so they're always trying to second guess what would I do before I actually tell them, and then they get so frustrated if they guess differently. And they're like, we're trying to figure you out. And I said, well, good luck with that. You may take a lifetime to figure me out. But I love the fact that they're usually a step ahead of me. I have an amazing team and family, and fortunate to be a part of that.
Well, that's great. Well, I know you've got to get going, so we really appreciate you taking the time to be on the show and explain a little bit about what Shada does, what you do. I've seen you in the ring with horses. It is just amazing how they handle and how they you almost between you and the horse, there's a communication in the ring that really comes out when you're with a horse. So I really enjoy watching you out there.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Okay.
Well, enjoyed spending a few minutes. Would like to have made it longer, but as you can tell, I can be windy, so that maybe is best for everybody, that they didn't have to endure too much more. But appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Jeff. Appreciate everything you've done for us.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
Right.
Good luck
during
the rest of the horse show. Let's take why don't we take a break right now? We're broadcasting live at the Arabian Horse Show in Scottsdale. This is fantastic. All these beautiful horses, beautiful weather. Come on out and enjoy the show, and we'll be right back after this break.
Beerenbaum Baum and Spien PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spien works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinsohn & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinsohn & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues in corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today. 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Beerenbaum & Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum & Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Breakthrough Thinking Live here in Scottsdale. We're at the Arabian Horse Show at Westworld. And, of course, this is a special edition of Practical Business Solutions starring Jim Heighton of Ridenour, Heighton & Lewis. Jim, our first guest was just amazing. Very interesting.
Very interesting. It's a completely different business from anything you've ever seen. You know, we've interviewed people on the radio. I mean, they make widgets or they buy and sell widgets, but it's all inanimate. And here, their entire industry depends upon these very live animals that, like Jeff said, have personalities.
Yeah.
It's just different. So, but this is a great show to be at. So
it really is. It's beautiful, beautiful weather. Probably, I'm going to say, 75, maybe 80 degrees out today. And so, Jim, you're pretty familiar with the Arabian Horse Show here in Scottsdale. You want to talk a little bit about it?
Well, what's interesting about this is that when you look at the sign, it says it's the 59th annual Scottsdale Arabian Horse Show. And hardly anybody realizes it's been going on for 59 years. It started in the early 1950s. It actually, I think it was at one time at the McCormick Ranch. Before McCormick Ranch was actually developed, there was an actual McCormick Ranch in North Scottsdale. And I think that it's moved in different places. Now it's here. And it's a fantastic, site up here with Westworld. I mean, I can't imagine where else you could put together, a horse show of this size, 2,200, 2,300 horses, plus all the people on there. And it's a different kind of show, and it's just great to see this number of people out there. And it's really busy for a Thursday.
It is. It looks very busy, and I'm sure the weekends just are packed.
Yeah.
Which is really really cool. So, you know, if all the listeners, you should get out here at Westworld and enjoy, because there's some really beautiful horses I've seen so far, all shapes, sizes. I saw one with a coat all the way down its back. I mean, it was really interesting to see that.
Yeah, you'll see, as Jeff was alluding to, there's halter, there's performance, and performance has different categories, so there's lots of different things that you deal with in the different horses. But as I say, this has been going on for almost 60 years, and as I say, since the state is only 102 years old, anything that's gone for 60 years is quite unique in this area. And, you know, it's interesting that Jeff mentioned, one of the names that comes up here locally a lot is Tom Chauncey. And, you know, a lot of people who have been here for a while remember Tom Chauncey and, you know, the fact he owned a TV and radio station here, and quite an influential man here. But one of the things he did also was he was in the Arabian horse business. And I think his local presence and his personality really helped, you know, jumpstart the Arabian horse industry in this area. And kept it going in the lean times, and so it's really something. Oh, here we go. We've got our next guest on the show.
This is great. And, of course, again, live in Scottsdale, the Arabian Horse Show at Westworld, and sitting here with Jim Hypen. And Jim, why don't you do the honors and welcome our next guest.
I will. We'll let him adjust his microphone and his headphones a little bit, and but our next guest is Larry Gerald of Gerland Farms, and Larry is just he's almost all pervasive in this industry. Everybody does everything. He knows everybody, but his passion is Arabian horses, and his Gerland Farms is one of the internationally known entities in the Arabian horse industry, and you just hear about him everywhere. And, you know, welcome, Larry. It's good to see you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Welcome to the show.
First of all, I got to correct one thing.
Okay.
My last name is Jerome.
Okay.
Gerland is J-E-R from Jerome, and land is for the farm.
Oh, okay.
So Gerland.
Sorry. Okay.
My father would have to want me to correct
that. Okay. Well, tell us, you know, one of the things I always ask people is, how did you get into a business like this? This is a different kind of business. How did you get into it? And then tell us about the business.
You really want to know my life story?
Huh? No, just, you know, as I say, it doesn't sound like, did somebody start out to be in the Arabian horse business, or do you just wind up there?
Well, my journey, I was brought up in the food industry. My dad was the founder of the Genio Turkey Store. And I was an animal nut. And my cousin showed a calf in 4-H, so I wanted to join 4-H, and I joined 4-H, and then I ended up getting a calf with the agreement that I would sell this calf when she was 2 years old. I coerced my father into taking me to a horse sale, and we bought an Arabian, half Arabian mare that had a foal by her side. But typically, as a kid, I was the kid who dragged every animal home, and whether it was a puppy, a cat, whatever. And my parents told me that when you get your own place, you can have anything you want. Well, I'm now 65, and I have everything that I want. And I have a menagerie from German Shepherd dogs to Arabian horses to dairy cattle, to beef cattle, to seven kids that were very active in 4-H that showed steers and lambs and whatever. But my journey in the horse business, I think the way most kids start into it, by reading books, the Walter Farley books, The Black Stallion, Misty of Chincoteague, those types of things. And I just always wanted a horse, and, you know, and I got a horse, and I had this passion instilled in me when I was young that my dad was always believed in being a winner, that you try hard. You don't always win, but you always try hard. And I got more and more involved, and I used to go to a farm that was in the Rice Lake area It was owned by a very prominent person in the Arabian industry, Evelyn and Lloyd Burton. And I used to, you know, persuade my mother just to take me up there to that farm so I could go in and smell the leather in their saddle shop and their halter shop. And then Evelyn would take me by the hand, and I was able to go walk through the pastures, and I saw all these incredibly beautiful Arabian horses that most of them were descendants of a great stallion by the name of Gazan that they had at the time, which was part of the Ghani program. And, of course, Ferzan was the founder of the Ghani, part of the main, one of the mainstays of the Ghani operation. Now, Dan Ghani sold class rings and had a farm in Owatonna, Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Lots of people in Arizona see the Ghani ranch, but they maybe don't put the connotation together because this is, it was a ranch in its day. And I've been, you know, as I grew in the industry, I, of course, met all of these people from Frank McCoy to the LaCroix to all the people who had a, you know, major impact in the industry. But I just always, you know, had a passion for this, and my kids had a passion for it, and we strived very hard to create great horses and great relationships with people. And I, and to this day, I still believe that the door that opens the people for in this industry is that people come to buy a horse first to ride and to love and to have as a pet. And that is your, that is, you know, your segue into getting into horses. Of course, other people, then they get into it, and then they maybe get into the halter field, or they get into the reining field, or they get into the English performance field. But the first thing is that dream of riding that beautiful black horse across a beach by the ocean. You know, it's, you know, it's whether it's, you know, it's your dream, it's what's, you know, but that's, you know, for me, it was, that's where it started. I mean, I ended up, my folks, I think, wished I would have found another thing that I liked, because I ended up with a broken arm, broken ribs, broken jaw, you know, broken legs. I had, my parents spent more time in the emergency room with me than I ever spent with any of my seven kids. I only had one accident with my kids. But so it's something that I dearly love, and I love all phases of the industry, whether it's the English horse, the Western horse, the reining horse, you know. I just love the horses, and I love the people.
Tell us about Geraldine. I mean, how, what all does Geraldine do? I mean, it sounds like it's a, it's a, it's an all-encompassing kind of company, but I know that in the horse area, it seems like there are specializations. So if you do one thing, you don't do something else. What all does Geraldine do?
Well, we have, you know, my passion is first and foremost is in breeding. But I like to breed great horses, and I think that as a breeder, you have a responsibility that when you bring a baby into the world, it has to have a home. You can't just breed to collect. You can't just breed for that one great halter horse or that one great performance horse you have. You know, you're going to create, if you have 20 babies, then you need 20 homes. And they have different abilities. You know, my focus has always been on the total horse. I want a horse to be, you know, meet the standard of what the breed is about, the beauty, the quality, the temperament, that type of thing. But I also, I want that horse to be an athlete. And so, you know, that's what we strive for first and foremost. With our, with what, where we take the horses from there depends a little bit on their abilities. I mean, it's you know, I'm in the dog business too. I compete German Shepherd dogs. People will sometimes say to me, you know, I want the pick of the litter. Well, my philosophy is there's no really a pick of the litter. You have to put the right puppy with the right person. The same way my five daughters could not all be married to each other's husbands. You know, you have to have a good fit. And that's the same thing with that horse, is you have to look at the experience of the rider, and you have to look at what their passion is. You know, some kids are more into things than others. I mean, our daughters and sons that rode, they rode in different disciplines. You know, I have one daughter that is a tremendous rider. She's won national championships in the park horse division and English divisions. I have another daughter who's won national championships in the Western divisions. I have grandsons that even in one family where I have the oldest grandson in one family rides a beautiful Western horse, and now the his little brother's riding a saddle seat horse. So it's kind of fitting them to who they are and, you know, what you're going to do. I mean, if you're a car salesman and a family of five walk in, two-seated Porsche.
Yeah. Yeah, right.
You get them an SUV.
Right.
So, but at the same time, the young guy that's out there, you know, cruising for chicks, I mean, he's going to want the sports car.
Right.
So you have to kind of, you know, fit it to that thing. And I think that that's the philosophy that we try to live by and to do. I mean, I have horses that I know will work well with, you know, certain English horses. I have certain horses that I think work well with, you know, from the Western division. But I think one of my things that's the most exciting for me is I have two stallions that we stand that are, you know, the integral part of our breeding program that have winners in both the halter world and both in the performance world. And that's what you really want to create is a total horse. And it, you know, and it makes it easy for us when we have a foal crop that these babies, we have people that are looking for their homes. Cadrage, of course, is the number one producer of Western horses in the United States or even in the world because the biggest market is right here. And our other stallion, Giovanni, is, you know, has babies that are coming right along behind and doing the same thing. In fact, we're breeding the Giovanni daughters to Cadrage. We're breeding Cadrage daughters to Giovanni. And I've traveled the world, you know, and I'm looking for mares that are going to work. And, you know, one of the things that if you want to be in this industry is you have to take your what you have to the rest of the world because otherwise they don't know who you are.
So do you know when you breed, now this is probably not a great question, but when you breed and you get the babies, do you know if they're going to be a halter or a performance horse or is it just something that you have to wait till later to find out where they're going to be in the horse world?
Well, I think that you have a good indication that they can be both.
Okay.
Or whether they're going to excel in one area or whether they're going to excel in another area. I mean, it's the same thing in my German Shepherd world. I mean, I don't want a dog that's just beautiful. I want the dog to be able to think. I want a horse that I can ride, but I still want it to be beautiful. You know, I have five blonde daughters. They're all very good looking, but they're all very intelligent. You can have both. You know, you don't have to settle on one thing. And I think when you strive to do that, I think you have a better chance of achieving that. You know, there's no 100% successes. But I was very excited this morning. I ran back and forth between a couple of these rings here because I saw in the program that there were a couple of young horses that we had sold that now here were different owners that were going to be in the performance ring. And I was very pleased to see how well they were doing. And that's what you want. Is you want people to have what you sell them to have success with it. That's, you know, that's what makes everybody happy.
That's great.
I'm just going to ask, going back a little bit, you said your parents said when you're 18 you can have whatever you want, which is cool. And then you said you got everything you want. Two parts to this question. Is there some common element among all animals, because you seem to have a diverse group of animals? And second, what is unique about the Arabian horses?
Okay. There is definitely, you know, I'm an animal judge. I can judge different species of judges from beef cattle to lambs to hogs to a horse to a dog, whatever. My first rule of thumb, and when you're judging an animal, is you look at the animal and what is the purpose of this animal. Okay? You're judging a hog. They have two major cuts of meat are going to be from the ham and from the loin, the chops and your hams. So you're going to need that muscle. You're going to do that. You're going to have a body that's going to carry through. And you're going to have to, even if you're looking only for the meat, the animal still has to be able to walk to the feeder. It has to be able to get around. So therefore, you have to have the shoulder lay back. You have to have correct structure, which makes it, you know, athletic enough so it can move. It's the same thing with a dairy cow. If she's going to milk, and she has this tremendous ability to give a lot of milk, but if she doesn't have the physical capacity to walk to the feeder and back to get to the place that she lays down, if her udder structure is not correct enough so that it's healthy that she can produce this product, the same thing. With a horse, you know, the horse is a beast of burden. Whether you're talking a draft horse, I also have Belgians, but whether you're talking a draft horse or an Arabian, it's a beast of burden. So you need to have that muscle structure that has to lay correctly in the shoulder and into the hind quarter, over the back, all of those things that make it an athlete, you know, but they're part of the beauty and the symmetry of the animal. It's kind of, we talk in livestock judging, we talk about the three circles, that your front and your center and your hind, and it has to all blend together. You know, you need a symmetry. You can't have a great front end and a poor back end. You've got to have the whole symmetry, the whole balance. So I think that that's what, makes it unique. I love all breeds of horses. I maybe shouldn't say that in an all-Arabian show, but I do. I was brought up with Afs. I was brought up with quarter horses. I showed them as a kid. I love the Arabian because I like the extra sexiness about the horse. I think that, you know, other than that, you know, and I enjoy all of the different disciplines. So you see Arabian horses that look a little bit different. I think one of the things that's a little bit more unique about the Arabian horse compared to other breeds is that the versatility of all the different areas that you can compete in. You know, it's a foundation to a lot of, you know, other breeds, but it's a horse that has the versatility to be a Western horse, to be an English horse, to be a reining horse. It's a horse that can think. I mean, lots of people would say, make a comment, they make a generalization about an Arabian horse that they're all hot. Well, that's like saying that all Polish people aren't too sharp. You know,
yeah.
You're making a generalization. You're going to get yourself in trouble. There are horses that are hotter. There are horses that are more subdued. There are, you know, those brilliant Polish people around the world.
Yeah.
You know, there's you can't make those types of stereotypes. I think that, you know, and I maybe, but this is a true statement. So I'm a pretty direct person. So I make this statement. Part of my interest in the Arabian horse was, you know, I'm definitely a strong family person. I have 7 children and 22 grandkids. Now, one of the things that I found quite interesting about the Arabian industry is it's a unique group of people who share a love for a horse, but they're very diversified in their backgrounds. And you have people who are, you know, heart surgeons, you have people who are airplane pilots, you have people who are land developers, you have bankers, you have people of all walks of life who converge here over their horses, and they become friends because of this. I'm big into genetics. I'm big into genetics even in the human world. I could not, as a parent, I cannot control who my children ultimately marry. But by putting them around other people that have goals and aspirations, hopefully they will meet kids of the same values and that type of thing. And I think that that's, you know, something that's been very true. They all have great marriages and they're motivated people and things like that. And I find myself very stimulated by all of the people that I meet in this industry, the things that they have accomplished. I mean, I just went over to the big area where they have all of the displays for all the sales, you know, all the over there. And I have a friend over there by the name of Carol that is wanted me to come over to see her booth. Now, we've been friends for many years over horses. I had no idea that she was this incredible sculpture. I mean, it's just, you know, it's all of the doors that are open to you because of, you know, all of these things. So, I mean, the horse business to me is about the passion of the horses, but it's also a passion about a whole lot of other things that exhilarate me in life. I mean, when I go to travel to horse shows, whether it be in the Middle East, whether it be in Europe, whether it be in South America, it's always these incredible horses that I meet, but it's always these incredible people that I meet that make me want to go home and want to work harder and achieve more.
That's one thing I've been interested in, because I know that you do this international traveling and in the Arabian business. I mean, is the Arabian horse industry overseas as big as it is here, or is it bigger? I mean, like in Brazil, the Middle East, I mean, Canada?
Well, I don't know that it's bigger, but it's certainly in many areas it's equal to. You have a different type of a population. But, I mean, the Brazilian entourage is here in full force. Incredible people. Absolutely some of the most incredible people you could ever meet. They're not only because of their horses, because of what they've accomplished in their businesses, their, you know, the human side of them. You go to Dubai and you go to that part of the world, you definitely have a different flavor. But, I mean, that's the origin of the Arabian horse, and where we probably don't use the horse as much in this country in the racing area over there in that part of the world. I mean, that's still in a very, very important part of the industry, whether you're in, you know, into Saudi area or whatever part of the Middle East that you're in.
What about Europe? Is it something that Europe does much in?
Oh, yeah. There's I have friends in Switzerland. I have friends in Belgium. I have friends in Germany. There's all kinds of great people in the Shirley Watts. Shirley Watts is Charlie's wife. Charlie, of course, is the drummer for the Rolling Stones. You'd never realize that maybe Charlie is this wild drummer when you see him in his suit at the show, but he's a very incredible man, you know, and this is where people of different walks of life sit, and, you know, you're not the gawker taking the picture and asking for the autograph. You're sitting there talking. I mean, Wayne Newton was one of my best friends years ago, and, you know, I can remember when one of his personal attendants, a guy they called Bear, would say, "Hey, Larry, the boss wants to talk to you." So we go and we talk horse. We didn't talk about what was going on in Vegas. We go talk about horse. And, of course, he was an incredible. Wayne had is a tremendous entertainer, but he also has an incredible eye for a horse. And he actually came to Rice Lake, Wisconsin, and ended up buying a horse by the name of Aramis. They changed his name to Aramis when they got here. But he was a horse that the Burtons imported from Poland. You know, and you have a lot of, you know, from the European standpoint, you know, it's the history that's so incredible. You know, and I worked, when I first was, you know, went to work over in Europe, in Germany, right after the wall came down, I was invited to go work in the Dresden-Meissen area for a cattle company called Sachsenzer und Zuchterverband, which is the Saxonian Cattle Breeders Organization. Well, when I was there, I became very good friends with a fellow by the name of Stefan Troisch. Stefan is, when we were talking about Dresden, because Dresden was firebombed during World War II.
Yes.
Okay, so part of the history of the Arabian horse is that you had the Russians that were chasing the Poles, and, you know, and everything kind of converged in Dresden on this one particular night. And this is where the firebombing took place. This is where a number of these stallions were killed, and there were a few that were saved. And it turns out that the father of my friend is one of the gentlemen that was helping hold the horses that night. So it becomes such an interweaving of history and, you know, of the whole thing. So, I mean, Europe has a huge part in this thing. And the Polish horses, I mean, there's great horses in Sweden. There's great horses in Norway. So, I mean, yeah, the European contingency is very, very important. I mean, a horse by the name of Aladdin came out of Europe. And there's a number of great horses, El Shaklan, that were all came. You know, and this is where, you know, you have all these families that merged together. And then, of course, you had gentlemen like Najib Yaoudi from Brazil who came and exported a lot of great horses from this country to down there, which kind of founded, you know, a lot of the things like that. You've got You've got, you know, Fernando down in Argentina. I mean, just, you know, Lady Gina Pelham, you know, incredible.
Wow.
So, you know, that's just all these opportunities to meet great people, tremendous people in Chile, all over the world. Antarctica is about the only place I think that doesn't
exist. Yeah, okay.
This is the 59th anniversary of having the Arabian Horse Show here, right, Jim?
That's correct.
What have you seen over the years, changes, things that haven't changed, maybe things that you'd like changed? So what have you seen over the years?
Well, I've been coming here a long, long time. And, of course, first of all, things have changed because the show wasn't here. The show was on Bell Road, and I used to be able to go to my parents' home from on Bell Road to Sun City West in about 10 minutes. You used to be able to come down Scottsdale Road, and there were four stoplights and maybe a couple of wind catchers on the corner. You know, that was that has definitely changed a lot. Of course, Scottsdale, the weather is not, you know, we've had a variety of weather, to walking around in boots, to trying to, helicopters trying to dry out rings, to whatever. I think I missed the show box and the palm trees in the center of the ring on Bell Road. I miss all my old friends like Dee Dee Wrigley and Tom Chauncey and Frank McCoy and all of those people who were such an, you know, such an integral part of this industry. Those things have changed. To some degree, I think that, you know, we don't have quite the population of breeders that we used to have. You know, people have come, they have their trainers, they ride in their specialty areas. So, you know, it's not the breeding thing is maybe just a little bit different. We, of course, have merged our ways of thinking in the breeding as we have, you know, become more aware of what the desires are in the European and the Middle Eastern world. So, you know, some of the horses have kind of gotten back into more with the type thing is maybe a little bit stronger than it was in the past. We used to have horses that were bred strictly for just an English area or maybe a Western, and they didn't care quite if the head was a little lunky or whatever. So, we've kind of gotten back into that. I mean, yeah, I'd like to go back to the way things were when I was 18, but it's not going to happen.
Yeah.
So you meet new friends. You go on, but, you know, I'd also like to look the way I did when I was 18. Yeah. But, you know,
you look really good for 65. I got to tell you, I thought you were in the mid 40s.
Yeah,
right?
No kid.
No, you really do.
Yeah.
I have a 43-year-old daughter.
Is that right? That's amazing. But the passion remains the same, I suspect, over the years with people coming here. Is that right?
Yeah, I think the passion remains the same. I mean, there are definitely. You know, there's definitely diehards that, you know, some of us, there's people that come and go that exit the industry and then they come back. And there's, I mean, even I took a somewhat of a sabbatical for a while when I had 7 kids and 5 of them in college. I mean, I couldn't do all of the things that I wanted to do. It's an industry that, you know, it does cost you a dollar once in a while.
Yeah, I can imagine.
There's worse ways than you could spend money than watching your kids ride their horses.
Well, that's true. I mean, I could tell you're such a family guy, and that is so important. And that's what I got from what you've been talking about today. I guess the common denominator are horses, but they're all have love for their families. Is that?
Yeah, I think that's. I mean, we're a group of people that, you know, that were families. I mean, years ago I met Dave and Linda Maney. I mean, we have been friends for years. They have 6 kids. We have our 7. I mean, we don't see each other often, but when we see each other, I mean, it's you can't wait to see one another and hug and kiss one another. And even, you know, from all over the world, you know. Last night I was out to dinner with Brazilians, you know.
Well, what's interesting, obviously the common bond is the passion and love for horses, in this case Arabian horses, and that brings a certain bonding, doesn't it?
Yeah.
One thing I've been noticing in talking to people, and you bring it up again, is that it seems like a lot of the people and the companies that are in this industry are, it's family. You know, it's going from one generation to the next generation. Do you find, is that kind of what a lot of the companies are like in this industry? It's a family business that got started?
I think so. There's a lot of, there's a lot of training centers. You have a gentleman by the name of Jody Strand, who is a tremendous trainer from Iowa. The Strand family started in Iowa. They owned a very famous horse by the name of Hal Gibby. The son, Jody, now has a tremendous operation. He rode the Horse of the Year this year. His nephew, Ryan Strand, is in it, you know. I'd love to be out there riding, but I watch my daughter now. I watch my grandkids ride, and that's what I, you know, I think that's what a lot of us try to do is to have it go from generation to generation, you know. But certainly you have kids that don't have the passion for it. And then, of course, when you bring in the equation of in-laws, they know sometimes things change too. But it's
That's right. Well, the reason I bring it up is in my business, I see a lot of businesses that are family-owned, and they're going from one generation to the next. But a lot of them, they either make widgets or they buy and sell widgets. And it's rare to see a third generation in those types of business. They just don't seem to last that long. Somebody finally says, well, why do this? We'll just sell. But in this business, I think, and the people I've talked to, I've seen more three- and four-generation companies than any other industry I've seen.
Well, I think probably one of the greatest success stories in the Arabian horse industry for judging and for performance horses and passion for horses would be the White family. And you have Stanley White Sr., you have Stanley White Jr., you have Stanley White III, and you have Stanley White III's son. I don't know if he's a Stan or not, but he's a very cute little kid. But to me, a very emotional time was at the U.S. Nationals when that entire family was brought into the ring, you know, and they were acknowledged for their dedication to the Arabian horse and to the industry. And that's, and you have a lot of that. I mean, you have a lot of passion for that in this industry.
Okay, I do want to ask you about one of your horses that every time the name comes up, people just, they just stop, and that's Giovanni. I mean, it seems like Giovanni, people know, it's a name. He must be a wonderful stallion. Now, I've only seen him once and in an informal setting, and the thing that struck me about him is he knew he was a show. When he was out in the ring, it was like he had an attitude of almost like, watch me, you know. You know, tell us about Giovanni. How did you get him, and how did you start with all that?
Well, Giovanni has a very unique story. It kind of starts with Kadraj, because I was down here in Arizona visiting my father, who had broken both his hips one at a time, 6 weeks apart.
Wow.
And I was staying with him and in the hospital, staying, you know, by his side. My mother had passed away. And one day I said, Dad, I just need to go for a ride. So I went for a ride, and I went up, and I went to a ranch called Petroglyph Arabians and walked in to see my old friend Leo Hansen sitting there. Leo Hansen and I, of course, went back years after. He was representing a horse by the name of Aladdin Echo, and I was representing a horse by the name of L.H. Garcia that was the supreme champion here in Scottsdale in 1986. So this goes back a long history. Hadn't seen each other for years. And Leo wanted to start showing me horses right away. He says, Leo, I'm killing time. I don't want to buy a horse. But anyway, the gist of the thing is after about 2 hours of looking at horses, I found this incredible Kadraj daughter. So I bought her for my daughter, so she has a Western prospect, which she turned out to be a halter horse prospect as well. Well, later on, I'm always looking at genetics. I heard about this young colt, and through a friend of mine, Jerry Shaw, and we pursued it, and we bought Giovanni. He was kind of the first time that we had him home, we were in the arena at the Shada Skull, at the Shada Arena. He kind of came up and just kind of blew at me, and I was like, here I am, this kind of thing. And he was always an incredible horse, but he was always an incredibly kind horse. So his journey kind of went from being shown as a yearling by Ted Carson at the Nationals as a yearling, where he went third, which was good for us because, people always look at the horse that goes one and two. They never look at the horses beyond it. Sometimes the best horses are below. And in this case, I believe that he was. So we ended up buying him. And we brought him down as a two-year-old. We showed him here at Scottsdale as a two-year-old. He did well. The following year, then we knew we were going to get him ready for the U.S. National Futurities. That year, my son, future son-in-law at that time, Mike, was riding the horse to condition him because, there again, a horse must be an athlete. And if he could not be, or if he was not a horse that could be ridden, I wasn't going to be doing anything with him. So, but part of Giovanni's problem is he's a very kind horse. Huh. And he's a little bit like, don't you think I look nice today? He's very confident in himself. He's not this fiery breathing, horse that some of the stallions are that, they're almost quivering that they're so hot. But he's a little bit more subdued than that. So, but it's a little bit when he hits the ring, he just kind of comes alive, and when the crowd starts to cheer, then that just makes him blow up more. So he was national champion Futurity Stallion that year. And we took him home, and we decided to rest him. And then I mentioned Stanley White the second. I went and talked to Stanley. I said, I have a vision for this horse. I want to show him at Scottsdale. I want to show him at Las Vegas. I want to show him at the Canadian Nationals. I want to show him at the U.S. Nationals. I want to fly him to Europe and show him at the Salon de Cheval. And then I want to bring him back to you. And the next year I want you to bring him back as a performance horse and become national champion there. This is all easy. We're going to win all these things. Well, it doesn't always work that way, but that was the plan. Well, we came to Scottsdale as a five-year-old. I sent down a personal groom with him. For some reason, I was very, very nervous about letting him go and stuff. I was so attached to this horse. And we sent him down here, and we won our division in the Stallion Championship down here that year. I think we were four or five-year-olds. I got to remember. But I guess it was five. And so we had completed step one. Step one was to go to Las Vegas. And that's when the story becomes a little tragic because 10 days before the Las Vegas show, I got a phone call. My mentor in the German Shepherd industry had passed away, and I had been asked to fly to Seattle to sing and play for her funeral. And I got a phone call from Jeff saying something's happened and it's not good. And I said, well, just keep me posted. So I'm in the process of driving down to this funeral. I have to meet with the family who's like my family, and I have to kind of forget about my horse, but I have all this going on in my head. And anyway, Giovanni had fractured his leg in seven places. So we took him to the Southwest Equine, and fortunately for us, we met a very, very incredible man by the name of Dr. Jeff Aldrich, who I think is one of the finest men I have ever met in my life. And because Giovanni was insured for a tremendous amount of money, we had to fly in the insurance people, and they flew in their veterinarian, and they met with us, and Dr. Aldrich was a young man, probably 35 at the time. And the gentleman that was flown in was probably in his late 50s. And I could tell as insurance veterinarian was describing how he wanted the treatment, that I looked on Dr. Aldrich's face, I took Jeff aside and said, I want to ask you a question. I says, I know that you're young. And maybe you don't have the experience of this man, but do you believe that this is the right diagnosis? And they said, he said, no, that he didn't. I said, then I want you to do what you want to do because I believe in you. So the journey, we went that way, maybe cost me my insurance money if the horse had died, but the horse didn't die. But this horse is so brilliantly intelligent that he learned to accept IVs in his neck. He learned to accept being put to sleep every other day so they could change the dressings, all the special things that they had to put on his foot. We had people that we had friends from the, you know, you talk about, I'm one of these guys I visit with everybody on the plane. I had a good friend by the name of Ken Newowner who has nothing to do with horses. He'd go down and he would go visit Gio every day, take care of it. I had another gal who went down to sing to him. We had all these people that would go and to see him, and he's just this kindest heart. It's the same break that the racehorse Barbador had. It's the exact same break that he had, but that horse, you know, the biggest problem with horses is when they break a leg, why they usually say we're going to shoot them, you know, in the movies, is because there's no muscle on that portion of the leg. There's only the skin to feed this, and, of course, horses have to stand on all 4 feet, and they develop a problem. It's called laminitis, which the blood flows so fast to the foot, and then it cannot get away, and then the sole actually falls out of the bottom of the hoof. Wow. Well, because Giovanni learned to lay down and learned to take care of himself, and because he trusted people, he made this miraculous recovery. He didn't walk very well. And then I had to make another really hard decision to what am I going to do with him after he got better. This was after about 3 or 4 months, and that's the first time I had spent summers in Arizona. And, you know, I'm from Wisconsin, and we're going to get 18 inches of snow tonight, but you can have your 117 degrees in the summer. But anyway, so I had to then find, you know, and I felt that before him was to swim. You know, a horse needs to exercise. You have to, if you want to be an athlete, you have to use your muscles, whether it's we go into the gym even though we don't want to, or swimming or whatever you do. So I, with the help of another friend of mine, Andy Selman, he got me in contact with Greg Galoon. And Giovanni then had an air ride, trailer ride from Scottsdale to California, to San Ynez, and there he became Giovanni Phelps. And he learned to swim, and he has a tremendous life. I don't get to see him as often as I want to, but he is, at the present time, we brought him to the show this year. He's not on the grounds, but the Galoons have stalls over on Paradise, Horse Paradise Road or whatever it is over there, and over at the Pomeroy Farm, and we've been having several open houses, and he is a horse that has endeared himself to many, many people, and I have to tell you, it's a very hard thing for me to talk about because I still really love the horse, and it's really hard to be away from the horse, but it's in his best interest, and he's the horse for the world, and he now has horse babies coming in Brazil and in Australia and in Germany and the Middle East and all over. So he's has a lot of international flavor, and he's opened up many, many, many doors for me. I have pretty strong religious beliefs, and I have to say that Giovanni, I had the night that I was at Galoon's, it was kind of like I was laying there sleeping, and it was like my horse was talking to me and saying, okay, time to stop feeling sorry for yourself. Let's move on here and whatnot. So, I mean, he kind of motivated me to. Everybody breaks a leg once in a while. And I guess it's what you do with it how you recover and how you go on from there. And it's, so I think there's lots of life lessons with horses, too.
Yeah. What's interesting, you mentioned that he trusted people, and that certainly helped him
you know, survive. How about the, you described him as very kind. Was that an element to help the healing process?
Yeah, I mean, he's a very trusting, he's a very kind horse. In fact, Dr. Aldrich was almost killed by a stallion shortly after Giovanni was removed from the clinic because they had another stallion come in, and he had so used to this attitude of this horse that you can trust that you can do anything with, and he walked into this other stallion, he kind of went for him. So I think that's one of the most unique things about him is that he has this mind that just is so accepting, and that's an inherited trait. You know, that's one of the things, qualities that I look for in a horse, is that, you know, with all my, you know, when Giovanni won the national championship in Albuquerque, New Mexico, as a three-year-old, you have all these people who swarm out to see you and the presentations and everything. We had a little three-year-old kid go running right underneath him. You know, and the horse just stands there. So that's the type of personality that he has.
Well, you know, this is interesting to me. Would you describe then this horse and maybe other horses? There's a spiritual nature to the horse?
I definitely think so.
Yeah.
I think it's if you allow yourself to do that. You know, some people, horses are diamond rings or paintings. Mm-hmm. They're just collectibles. And to others of us, they are very, very embedded into who we are and what we are.
And I think you bring out the best, don't you think? I mean, as I'm listening to you, it's amazing. It's your story was very heartfelt, and I think you have a connection that I think they realize that you're kind as well.
Well, I think so. I think the horse knows.
Yeah.
It doesn't, you know, they figure you out. They're pretty smart. They figure you out pretty fast. And when you see how it's some of the tricks some of these horses can do, and I mean, it's so, you know, it's just so unbelievable, you know. So, and I'm not, you know, I feel, you know, right now at the present time, a very close friend of mine, Sheila Varian, is undergoing some cancer problems. Sheila's one of the most wonderful breeders in the world, but she's another one of these people who absolutely connects with her horse and, you know, and with all the people. But, I mean, that's her whole life. I mean, she...
Yeah. Now, one other question, and, Jim, I'm sure you have some others,
yeah.
And I think we're going to have another guest pretty soon. But Robert Redford, you know, I think he, in The Horse Whisperer, there was a movie, I forgot what it, maybe it's called Horse Whisperer. Is there, when you hear things like that, you probably could relate to that, right, where there's a strong connection. There's certain people that have such a strong connection with animals, with horses. Does that resonate with you?
Well, to some degree, I don't know that, you know, I think that you can generate those feelings between yourself and the horse. And I think that they immediately pick up on those types of what's going on in your body. You know, I've always told people, with my dogs, it's German Shepherds, of course, and when you're training a dog, when you're walking down the street with your dog, the dog immediately senses if you have this, because you think somebody's walking up behind you, or you think that maybe this is an unsavory situation I'm walking into,
yeah.
That dog immediately picks up on the change in your adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
I think that horse essentially does that exact same thing. I think that they, you know, when you're riding a class and you get nervous and you start to generate that nervousness, the horse picks up on it, the horse becomes nervous. I mean, and that's when, and it's hard not to be nervous, you know.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
Right. You know, you're in the horse business, but you're also a business person, because you have to be a business person to keep staying in business. And, you know, I see, you know, Geraldine and you always on when people have lists of the top breeders, even internationally, nationally, you're always on those lists. So how does Larry Jerome and Geraldine stay on top? What do you have a business plan, or is it part just observing what's going on in the industry and adapting what you're doing?
Well, I guess I would have to say I maybe don't adapt real well.
Yeah.
I have a vision of what I believe in, and that's what I do. And I think what happens to, you know, and you know, understanding the genetics, and that's, you know, it's, I don't know, it's like telling people, you know, how do you judge a horse or how do you do this, you know. I'm a musician, I play by ear. If you're a painter, some people paint, you know, that's a gift that they have. Some people can walk up to your car and say the carburetor's not running right, and, you know, and they can hear that, you know. I probably couldn't find the dipstick underneath the hood. But, you know, but I can look at a horse, and I do understand that, you know, I was fortunate as a young child, my dad being in the turkey industry. Back in those days, we didn't have computers, you know. I used to go with my dad, and I would take a pencil and pad, paper, because I had the best handwriting of the five kids. And I would, he would score a turkey on a leg score, a foot score, a weight score, how many eggs the hen laid, and on and on and on. And I started learning a lot about genetic traits. The genetic traits are very similar in all species of livestock. You have your dominant traits, you have your recessive traits. I like to study pedigrees and that type of thing. So getting back to, you know, our business plan is, you know, I can't be do everything. I cannot own all of these stallions and things. We focus more into the halter world, and those horses have to have the ability to perform in the Western world as well. Now, I have acquired some English horses for my grandkids and other members of my family who enjoy that sport, but I haven't endeavored to try to breed into those areas because I don't know that that's just something else, and I don't know, I'm running out of time to learn all these things.
So you stay focused on what you do best.
I stay focused on what we do best and what our stallions are, you know, and I'm looking for stallions to work into, you know, into our breeding program, and if a stallion offers, you know, if, you know, some of these horses can jump the barriers, but it's pretty hard. A Western horse can sometimes become a hunt horse. But it's pretty hard for a Western horse to produce high-stepping English horses and park horses. You know, the things have gotten a little bit, you know, different. But that's kind of the area, you know, that we focus in. And our mares are, you know, designed that in that way. And that's the passion that I like the best, I guess.
That's great. That's great. Well, we've gone kind of a long time without a break.
Yeah, let's.
That's why we're supposed to break.
Why don't we take a quick break? And when we come back, are we going to stay with Larry right now and until your other guest comes by?
Let's see.
Or do we have?
I think she's here.
Okay.
Well,
Kim is right there. Isn't
yeah.
She?
She's
oh,
right
okay.
Yeah. So, I just want to thank Larry Jerome and Geraldine for being here, giving us a real insight to the Arabian world. I mean, this is really, as they say, you know, so different from what we do a lot of on the radio shows, because they say we deal with people, a lot of times their businesses are just, they're inanimate objects. They just buy, sell, make. Here, you're dealing with a living, breathing animal that, you know, it seems like one day it may decide it wants to do what you want, maybe the next day it won't do what you want, but you've got a much different industry than any other industry we've seen before.
Well, I think it's a chance for, you know, it's a chance for families. It's a chance for lots of opportunities and different things. You're all invited to come to Wisconsin and visit us in the Northland. We're only about 2 hours from the Canadian border, and we have lots of snow, so you always have a white Christmas. But
oh, before we break, I do want to ask you one other question about your German Shepherds. You breed German Shepherds and train them, or?
Yeah, we have Shepherds. I have a kennel partnership both in the Netherlands and in Europe, and we do theatrical dogs. If you've seen the movie Beverly Hills Chihuahua, well, Jerry Lee is a product. That's not Jerry Lee, excuse me. That Jerry Lee, we bred Jerry Lee's mother in the movie with Belushi Canine, but in the movie Beverly Hills Chihuahua, the dog they call Delgado, his name is really Samson, but he was purchased from us by Birds and Animals Unlimited out of California, so we do that. But I invest my biggest passion in the German Shepherds. Most of them are going to end up as family pets, but we do lots of special needs kids with autism, cerebral palsy, Down syndrome. We have dogs that go into working into canine units and things like that. But there again, It's like the horse. You have to pick the dog for the right job. A dog that works as a handicap assistance dog is not going to make a narcotics detection dog.
Right.
So you have to kind of fit. So that's our passion. Our dogs are pretty are European. Our dogs are not the American-style dog because in Europe they have the emphasis not only on the structure but also on the working ability of the dog. It's something we call a Schutzen title. And your Koorungs and those types of things, and we kind of try to adhere to those types of things. But it's, there again, those are things, doors that were opened up to me when I went over to Europe, whether it was horse things, dog things, or cattle things, you know. They kind of become interconnected.
And I'm assuming genetics plays a big part in the dog.
It's all about genetics.
Okay.
It's all about
okay.
genetics. I always tell people, if genetics do not matter, then it doesn't make any difference who your daughter marries. And I think most fathers would feel strongly about
yeah,
that.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want to thank Larry Jerome and for being here representing Geraldine and telling us all about what you do. And this is great. This is one of the fun shows we've done in a long time.
Well, if they're interested, if they want to know more about us, they can just go to www.gerland.com,
okay.
G-E-R-L-A-N-D, and they can read all about everything.
You've got a great website, actually. I've been on that and seen it, so it's a really good website. So,
Larry, thank you so
thank
much.
Thank you so much.
And thanks for the heartfelt story. That is excellent. And we'll be right back with another special guest. We're live here in Scottsdale, Raven Horse Show. We'll be right back.
Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinzen & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Beerenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
At Beerenbaum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Beerenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Ridenour, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Welcome back again. You're listening to Breakthrough Thinking Live here in Scottsdale, the Arabian Horse Show. And this is a special edition of Practical Business Solutions, sponsored by right now our Heighton and Lewis. Jim Heighton is here with us. It's been fantastic so far.
It sure has.
And you want to introduce your partner.
Okay.
Chicken.
I know. All right. I'll introduce her. Zora Manjevich.
Manjevich.
Zich. I was close, right?
Yes.
I want to test you. I want to see if you could say it. What?
Manjevich.
Oh.
I think.
You did it very well.
Yeah, you did. How long have you known her?
Since she got to the firm.
All right. Well, that's the reason. You've had practice. I haven't. Anyway, this has been fantastic. It's a beautiful day right here at Westworld, and about 80, maybe 85 degrees. But a cool breeze coming out from the west, which is really nice. And you have another special guest right now here at Westworld. Kimberly Jarvis, and of course from Jarvis Insurance Agency. Kimberly, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, and I'm going to bring it right over back to Jim Heighton.
Well, this is great. Having Zora here and getting to talk to Kimberly and talk about your insurance business, and it's nice to have my partner with me, with Zora, because she's done insurance defense work and knows a little bit about that business. I'm a transactional guy, so I set up and do insurance business from a transactional standpoint. When it gets to the litigation side, that's Zora's part. But tell us a little bit about how did you get into this business, Kimberly, in terms of, I mean, you're one of, or if not the leading insurer of Arabian horses, and everybody mentions your name when you talk about, well, who insures Arabian horses? It's your agency that comes up.
That's kind of you to say so. Thank you.
How did you, what did you set out to be in the business, or did it just happen, or how did it come about?
My grandfather, Charles Jarvis, he was in the general insurance business, and he began selling insurance in the early 40s when he was shining shoes. And he established Jarvis Insurance in 1946 and opened up the office, and he did your mainstream home, auto, commercial, that line of insurance. He also was a boater, and so he was a commodore of a yacht club, and so he would do a lot with the boating and so forth. Then my mother and myself, we came along, started working in the agency, and always had a horse background. And so when it was in the stages where things were really boosting in not only in the Arabian horse market, but in the equine industry, there had seemed to be a real need and desire to insure horses, because the values of horses were going, not only with the Arabians, but with thoroughbreds, they were going from several hundred dollars to up into the millions. And as the prices of the horses escalated, banking was getting involved, and financing of horses were getting involved, and syndicates were holding paper. So it was a situation where I started to grow the family business with the horse business.
Oh, okay.
And so that's how that actually began. I mean, we dabbled in it a little bit in the early 40s and 50s when they were importing horses and exporting horses. But when people started really getting involved and making their family hobby into an actual breeding business is when the need for a specialist in this field became, and that's how my agency was put on the map.
You don't see many agencies that are qualified in all the states. That's pretty unique.
Well, it's a lot of work gentleman to be licensed in all states, and I think we discussed that a little bit earlier.
Yeah.
The insurance world is full of paperwork, so it's plenty of that, and so we just want to make sure that we do everything right. We grew our agency very small and the old-fashioned way, you know, by word of mouth, like any other family-owned business would be, and now we're writing in business internationally. I just returned prior to this horse show. I was in Kuwait.
Is that right?
Yes. So, as I was telling Zora, the Arabian horse especially is the bridge to friendships with all nationalities in all countries. It's really amazing, and they're quite an ambassador. And you would be quite impressed to see just the various countries in which we do business with.
Wow.
Give us an idea of some of the places you go.
Well, as I said, I was in Qatar, or I was in Kuwait. I go to Qatar, the Middle East, Dubai, Australia, South America. Brazil is very, very large in breeding and agriculture. Australia is very big. The United States is huge. And the United States has actually been a big marketplace that all countries have come to for several different kinds of different breeds of horses. And now we see that many of the American-bred horses, we find them all over. And, of course, the markets are going to China, and we're seeing them in Japan. And, well, I think pretty much where there's people, there's horses.
Wow.
And tell us how long you've been coming here to Scottsdale.
Well, nobody really wants to date themselves. But
all right, how about your company?
No, I can tell you personally, I've owned Arabian horses my whole life. And the Scottsdale Arabian Horse Show has been notoriously one of the best places to market Arabian horses. And I've been coming here since 1976.
Wow.
We started off at a different facility that was located on Bell Road in Paradise Valley. And pretty much the horse show had outgrown that facility. And we were fortunate enough to have Westworld come in and build this fabulous equestrian center that now, I mean, I would suspect that one day the U.S. Nationals for the Arabians will be here in Scottsdale, Arizona as well, and that's held in October.
That would
wow.
be great. So tell us about the insurance. What kind of insurance do you get for your horse?
Well, you know, we started off in the beginning with just writing mortality insurance on horses, and mortality insurance is very much like the life insurance would be for you or I. And as the business and of people having horses either for pleasure or for resale and for business purposes, many, many things have evolved. Then with science, additional things have evolved. And let me just backstop and then give you some ideas. At first, we were writing the mortality, and then we noticed that there was a great need for major medical coverage, somewhat like my hospitalization. And that is the veterinarian costs at times can be expensive, and certainly we don't want to preclude anyone from buying and getting involved in a horse, and so veterinarian expenses have been one of the reasons that question whether or not someone wanted to get involved. So we decided that we would offer a coverage where we would pay for any life-threatening accident, sickness, disease, illness on a horse covered under the major medical portion. Then we've noticed that breeding began to really grow, and then stallions were freezing semen and transporting it internationally. So we started writing infertility coverage for stallions, barrenness coverage for mares. We insure frozen semen, ship semen, unborn foals. It just as the business of horses grew, we began to tailor different policies to accommodate each different aspect of the horses. We also insure loss of use, that they're no longer capable of doing the job that they're intended to do. We insure them against this as well.
So, is there any horse that you, for example, when you talk about how things have evolved from the 70s when you started coming here, are there any horses that are too small to insure or too expensive to insure?
I I would not be able to answer that myself. That's up to the individual owner. In my opinion, I don't think any risk is too large or too small. We try to cater. I think we have children's 4-H projects, and they might be worth, you know, $1,000. And our minimum policy premium is, we've lowered our minimum policy premiums to $150. But if that poor child loses his 4-H project, that $1,000 represents the same financial loss as another person that may have $1 million horse or a $5 million horse. So it's really all relevant to the person in which you're trying to service. And that's why we offer so many different coverages for each individual person. You don't have to buy everything. You only buy what you need.
And you offer a special service here for the horses that are being sold, I understand.
Well, Scottsdale, Arizona, and this particular horse show is a huge marketplace for the selling of horses. We have auctions, private treaty sales. Horses that are competing here are showing on a daily basis. People are watching the horses and have interest. So I'm here with my golf cart as my office on wheels, and I have several other representatives from my agency working here to assist the trainers and the owners to sell and purchase horses. So we will bind the insurance coverage effective immediately upon the signing of the contract. So that's why I've been here now for a week, and horses have started selling early in the year in January here in Scottsdale. We do a lot of that over the phone, but it's always nice, especially coming from Ohio, and it is as much cold and winter as we have.
Right.
Spent 2 weeks here in beautiful Scottsdale, Arizona.
It's great.
So you're not suffering too bad working out of your golf cart?
No. Well, you know what? As I told you earlier, I'm one of the really fortunate people. I love my work. I merged my hobby, which is horses, my family business, which is insurance, and I wake up every day and I thank my lucky stars. I never have to wish on a lucky star. I thank them.
And you told me that now you are not only the second generation, but the business is continuing.
No, actually, I'm the third generation.
Okay.
My grandfather began. My mother was second generation. I'm third generation. And my daughter is, she's currently in Antwerp, Belgium, and she's actually flying to the horse show this evening so that she can watch some of our horses that are competing here. And she's an international business major and speaking 5 different languages. She's licensed, and she's helping and assisting with our Middle East and European market at this moment. So actually, it's 4 generations.
Wow. Congratulations.
Thank you. She learned this one of her international business classes. She had learned that only 3% of family-owned businesses survive to the 4th generation. So we feel very proud to be amongst that 3%. Also, we also feel very proud. We love our country. We're Americans, and we service all different countries and continents, et cetera, and bring that business into the United States, which makes us really, really pleased. And my daughter, who speaks 5 different languages, is an excellent ambassador with the Arabian horse in these foreign countries. So it works out brilliantly for all of us. We're very, 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 very blessed.
Well, and I think it says a lot for your company as well to have gone on through 4 generations giving good service to people. So,
well, thank you.
There's nothing to be said for that.
Well, if you're a consumer, and you, as I said, I own horses, so I understand what horse owners and breeders require from insurance because I need it as well. And so when you put yourself in your customers' positions and you can have empathy for them during troubled times and you can be on the rail and watching their horses win and cheering for them as if they were your own, because we do have that, the horse insured, it just makes it so much fun.
Now, you have some of your horses here, your own horses?
Yes, as a matter of fact, I do. I have Arabian horses that show in halter, and then I also have Arabian horses that compete under saddle. And I also brought horses here to market and sell.
Oh.
So wow. I've been very fortunate. I've had 2 horses show here. They both won. I brought 1 horse here for sale, and he sold yesterday.
Wow.
So And I'm on your radio station today.
That's great.
So it doesn't get much better than this, does it?
No, it doesn't.
Well, I'm curious because my background, when I was representing life insurance companies, I mean, it seemed like with mortality for humans, it was all about underwriting and actuarial tables and everything else and dealing with how they set up premiums. Does any of that enter into in the insurance on mortality of horses?
Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
The different breeds of horses, different disciplines in which you're doing with your horses, the age of your horse, because we have all these figures and statistics. We also know different problems. We know what is was successful, what is heroics. So we are as much involved as being a specialist in insurance as we are in horses.
Wow.
I mean, you know, yeah, with the horses and the care and the maintenance of such. And then we also insure the barns and the liability. And as you know, you really need to understand the business that you're recommending to your clients and the coverages that they need. And the Arabian Horse is a business, and so we try to accommodate their business and their liability needs and their fire, lightning, et cetera needs. And also don't forget, I mean, even the big tractor trailers with the, you know, 15 horse vans. I mean, a lot goes into this business.
We understand. Well, I've been told that many of the horses that are sold here during this event actually leave the country.
As a matter of fact, they do. Yeah, I would say that that Scottsdale, Arizona, this particular horse show, is the biggest marketplace for international buyers to come here and look at the horses that are competing, buy them, and bring them to their own home countries.
Wow.
And as a result of that, people have designed that so they bring their stallions here that are no longer competing, but they have their offspring here so that you can see stallions, you can see what they produced, you can see how well they're doing in the show ring, what divisions that their pedigrees are doing well in. And people in the horse business are so willing to educate and to, you know, take you by the hand and show you things. And that's why if you look around the horse show, you'll see people have little sitting areas in front of their stalls, and they welcome you in. And there's no question is a wrong question, and I think that's what helps this horse show be as successful as it is, because they offer so much for the public to come in and to see it, and the people that are here love their horses, and they're willing to share them with the public as well.
Yeah. Well, it's quite a show. I mean, to have this many horses in one place and have all these rings going from 8 in the morning till 5 at night, I mean, and even the indoor ring going in the evening.
Yes, evening's classes start, I believe they start tomorrow on Friday, Saturday, Sunday evening classes, yes.
The logistics of it all is just mind-boggling.
It is.
You know?
And I'm from Ohio, and it's not unusual for someone to be, you know, from New England coming all the way here. It's not unusual. There are many, many stables here from Florida, Georgia, from Washington State. Everybody's really represented very well here, Canada as well.
Where in Ohio is your office?
My office is located right outside of Cleveland, Ohio.
Okay.
And actually with electronics and email, so much is done now electronically that it makes it very easy for my business to service my clients worldwide.
Wow.
And for you to travel all over.
Well, it's always nice to meet people face-to-face, shake their hand, and a lot of times I like to make myself available to people that have any questions about their horses, coverage, or what to do next. A lot of times people have to worry, you know, they'll buy a young horse that they'll want to speculate on and be very successful in show ring, and what may have turned out to be a $5,000 horse could be a $500,000 horse. And so what one does is we'll all sit down and we'll go through show records, breeding records, and help them establish some of the values of the horses that they have. So, and I've seen many, many people have great success in buying young horses and speculating on them. and doing well and reselling them
right.
another. And then the next person making money on those horses. So you not only can have fun with them, but there also is some incentive to make money.
Right.
So do you also help with the evaluation process?
Yes, I do. I don't actually have a office that or a commercial exhibit space here because I'm always on my golf cart watching the show, seeing what the horses are doing, how they're placing in the ring. I'm educated about their pedigrees, who owns the horses, and when I go to foreign countries, I take a lot of the knowledge of this breed here in the United States with me there, and it all helps people establish values on their horses.
Wow.
So, but it comes easy.
To you.
Yes, it's very natural.
It is natural to you. Yes, it is.
And and for the Shawls, they're professional horsemen, and they show and train and market horses, so they know this. Larry Jerome is a fabulous breeder of horses that was on earlier, and he assists people on this. But we eat, live, and breathe the horses, and I just compound that with the insurance.
And we've met Jeff earlier, too. He started the show.
Yeah. Oh, yes, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Yes.
From Shada.
Yes,
mm-hmm.
Exactly.
And he's a professional that markets horses worldwide, and I'm sure he may have told you that, and is a very good person to help establish the current values of horses.
So you utilize some of their expertise as well sometimes when
yes.
you're looking at a horse?
Yes. As a matter of fact, we rely very heavily on the professional horsemen as well as veterinarians, because many times the horse trainers are our eyes, and so we establish working relationships with them, the licensed judges, and then also with the veterinarians. They tell us how the horses need to be treated under the major medical portion of the policy, and then we go ahead and respond to that. Or even for the mortality, like with Barbaro, everybody's very familiar with Barbaro. That was a heroic type of surgery. They knew going in that the odds were very, very slim to none that the horse would succeed, but the insurance company was with them every step of the way on that because he was a very valuable stallion.
Wow. Wow.
And that's pretty much what I do here as well.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, I know that one of our coworkers is insured by your company. And,
yes, she is.
And I've seen that policy, and it's a, you know, it's a very thorough policy. In terms of what you're covering, and you know, it seems like if the policy owner reads that, they're going to know what they are covered for, what they're not covered for. It seems like it's even clearer than most of the regular insurance policies I see for like humans.
Well, you know, the people take their horses as part of the family.
Yeah.
And we try to make it as clear and easy for them to understand, and we make ourselves available to go through the coverages and basically offer the broadest coverage available for the lowest price, especially for the Arabians, because they are not as much of a risk, going back to the actuary figures, as is other breeds of horses doing other types of disciplines. And so we do try to make it easy on them. And because in many times when losing a horse, it's like losing a family member.
Right, right. Well, I also saw that you offer all these other insurance products in connection with the whole operation. And all the horse operations I've seen, Arabian, Western, whatever, those are big operations. They got to have liability. They got to have fire. They have to have casualty. They have to have all those coverages to make it work.
Right, and they also need to carry care, custody, and control insurance.
What's that?
That coverage is while you have a non-owned horse in your possession that you're feeding, training, caring for, your liability policy does not cover negligence for this type of coverage, and it is completely excluded, so you have to give them another coverage. Should something happen to one of your non-owned horses, this insurance coverage will respond, especially if those people do not have mortality insurance on the horses. They're the first to come back to you and, you know, say you've done something wrong and we need to be compensated for our loss with our horse.
So that's like if Jeff from Shada is training the horse, like if the horse is somewhere else.
Right. Like if Jeff was training the horse and he got away and ended up on the highway, someone hit them, he'd be his liability. He would literally be responsible because for the liability to the car that the horse hit, and he'd also be. Well, I'm sure you know this. So you're the attorneys that he's also responsible because he let the horse get away and get onto the fairgrounds property, and so that would be the first person in command as far as going after to be legally liable for that horse getting on the road.
Wow, a lot of different things to think about and consider if you're going to be in this business.
Right, and that is why it's really just. Common sense, though, when one really looks at it, if you just take it, it's all nuts and bolts of what your exposures really are and where you need the coverage at, and that's my job. I'm to come in and look at your operation and see it. That's why I visit so many farms. Like when I'm in Scottsdale, we insure several farms within this area, so I'm constantly going to farms and. Saying, oh, look, you put a new $5,000 sound system in. We didn't realize that you did that.
Yeah.
We need to take a look at this. So it is a lot. But that's why you need to have someone that really understands it. That's why someone came to me that was, a stock car racer or something, and I'd probably send him to a specialist and not try to do that type of work myself.
So all the horses that are sold out here at the show, especially if they're financed, I'm assuming the bank or whoever finances is going to say, you got to have insurance on your horse if we're going to finance it.
That's true. Many people, there are banks that do get involved in the financing of horses, as well as someone may sell a horse. As an example, I sell you a horse, Jim, for X amount of dollars, but I'm going to give you 6 months to pay me in full. So I'm going to require you insure that horse for at least the unpaid balance, and I'm going to insist that you list me as lost payee on the policy.
Okay.
And I'm going to make sure that you pay those premiums until my contract is fulfilled.
Yeah. No, it's almost like key horse insurance or something.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, it's business.
Yeah. Well, you get involved in defending claims in the insurance business. How often does that happen, where you have a disputed claim?
You know, I'm really very fortunate with the underwriters that I work with, and many of the clients. I mean, certainly there's your bad eggs that are out there that try to commit fraudulent acts. But that's another reason why one needs to know who they're doing business with.
Right.
But I try to work with the clients, and even when we get into some gray areas, sit down and talk about it.
Right.
And that's really been my greatest success in this business and with the underwriters that I have, because we can sit down with attorneys such as yourself and you can work out what's best for your customer. We try to work it out between everyone, because court cases are very long and lengthy, as you know, but I don't run into it very often, but that's not to say that there are others in the business that do.
Okay.
And also, the biggest thing that I lose business to is self-insurance.
Right.
And everything is fine and dandy with self-insurance until something happens. And so there you have, and they always want to come back next. A person would want to go back with the one person that does have the insurance. And so that's when we need to step in.
All right. Do you, I'm just curious, because, again, I'm familiar with the regular insurance companies, but do you ever insure something that's so big you have to go to the reinsurance market?
All the time.
Is that right? Okay.
Oh, yes. Matter of fact, there's numerous horses that I have insured that we have 10 insurance carriers that we call it, they have lines on the values. So they'll each take a particular portion. You'll get a lead underwriter that will retain and lead a certain percentage, and then we get other reinsurers to come in and follow suit with that. So, yes, an answer to your question. And many, many times policies or companies will write horses or themselves up to X amount of dollars, and then everything else gets reinsured.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. So that the paper is... the policy is actually licensed and admitted in the country, or in the state, and then they're only willing to put X amount of exposure out there, and so that's when they'll go ahead and reinsure it. And rightfully so, because, you know, horses are eating, living, breathing,
right,
thinking individuals, and unfortunately, what can go wrong with horses?
Can't go wrong.
Yeah.
And it does.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As Larry explained to you earlier, even with his horse, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, he did tell us that story about Giovanni.
Yes, and yeah, it was a sad story. Well, it was a happy ending.
Happy ending.
But we didn't know what's happy in the beginning.
Well, as you point out, it, as I've said previously on the show, so many of the business owners we talk to, they're dealing with, you know, you either make widgets, you sell widgets, you buy and sell widgets, but they're just inanimate pieces of things, not a living, breathing horse. And that just, to me, it's fascinating that your risk factors when you introduce that living, breathing animal into the insurance, your management of risk must be a lot different.
The dynamics changes completely.
Yeah.
And that's why, in answer to your question, as far as the actuaries, this is what comes in. I mean, we look hard and fast at our numbers on a quarterly basis to see not only if we have exposure out there that are more exposure than we realize, but also if there's less, because we want to constantly be providing the best possible rates to our customers to make it affordable and not a luxury to insure horses, but affordable and a necessity. And that's one of the greatest ways that we have been able to build our business, because we rate things according to our experience.
I just can't imagine self-insurance is a very good way to go in this industry.
Well, you know, I can't quite understand it either, but it would be that would be a luxury to be able to afford to lose a horse and not have to worry about
right.
being compensated for the value of that. And, I mean, I actually have, without naming names or anything, but I have leaders of countries insurance. I have Crown Princes insurance. I have rock stars and musicians. And those are some of the people that you would think could afford not to insure their horses, but yet they do. So,
well, it sounds like it's just one of those expenses that you have to put in when you get a horse. It's not only feeding the horse, taking care of the horse, and possibly training the horse, and all, but you need to have the horse insured as well.
Well, and also, I'll even go back to the 4-H child that their parents had $1,000. I mean, those are the people that don't have $1,000 or $5,000 to go ahead and replace that horse for their child. And we try to pay all of our claims within 10 working days so that person can turn around and buy themselves another horse. And nothing can replace the horse they lost, but at least they can keep them in the business that they and showing horses and being around the horses that they love. And to me, that's a big reward in itself.
And it doesn't always have to be the replacement, because your coverage also is medical care. And so it doesn't always have to be something involved with litigation and lawyers and lawsuits or dealing with the mortality, the death of a horse, and have to think about replacing, but also about just getting care for the horse.
Correct.
Which is a good thing.
Right, right. Yes, that is a good thing.
And I'm sure you have some good stories that you could tell us about how the insurance coverage really did a good thing for a family or a horse or...
I would say, how many weeks do you have?
Yeah.
No, there's so many really rewarding, wonderful stories to say that I could share with you. And there's not enough time to go into it, but horses are really bring out the very best in people. And when something happens to these horses, it truly is a loss, and it's amazing how you think that it's the end of the world, and they'll go on to the next thing, and we'll see life back brought back into them again, and you know, because they're back in the ring again, and they're put back where they were prior to all this happening. Because we've had barns burned down where we'll have 50 horses insured for 40 different owners.
Yeah.
And the trainer with all the tack and the equipment. So, you know, when we have one loss, we're, you know, dealing with 50, 60 people. Because we have all the horses that are insured, and that is a sad story. I was actually involved in a stable fire. I was just driving by a farm that was, I looked up and I saw smoke coming up from the roof, and I pulled over immediately and ran to the front to get the people that live there. And by the time I did that, I turned around to see the barn, and they had just put up hay, and I would say within a minute and a half, 2 minutes, that hay was up just up that fast. We saved the 27 horses, though.
Well, that's a good story.
Yes, that is a good
story.
Yeah.
Yes.
And that wasn't even a customer.
Are they one now? They
should
be.
They should be, yeah.
Yes, that's absolutely true. It worked out really well for that. But, I mean, it's just one of those things. When you're involved in horses, you just can't help but help other people with horses.
You bet.
Great. Well, so you've been coming to the show since about the mid-70s.
Correct. And I've watched this horse show grow. I'm not even certain the number of horses. I mean, it's thousands of horses that are here now. It used to be, you know, a couple hundred, and it's grown to be now. I believe the show's 10 days.
Yes, yes. And when it was on Bell Road, was it near the old Chauncey Arabians up there?
Well, Chauncey Arabians, Mr. Chauncey, he was on Scottsdale Road.
Right.
And he had a lovely facility there. And actually, his daughter, Sharon Chauncey, is on the board and helps run this horse show.
Right.
And following in her father's footsteps in reference to building this horse show to be what it is today. And that, it was right on Bell, and there was a big horse training facility by the name of Lasma that was there.
Yes, okay.
And Carho was there. They had the big water fountain. Actually, Howard Kale family owned Carho, and they had the big fountain in the front with the water coming out of the horse's mouth and so forth. 75 years this year they're getting awarded for their contribution to the Arabian horse.
Is that right? Mm-hmm. It's a long time.
But a lot people have been coming here to the valley for Arabian horses prior to when I was born. So anyone is here in Scottsdale, Arizona that has Arabian horses.
Well, we were talking earlier about it. It's the 59th annual, and I mean, really, with a state that's only 102 years old, I mean, something that's been going on that long annually in this state is pretty unique. I can't think of very many.
It's significant,
like that.
And actually, that I don't have the figures, but what this horse show brings to the community in reference to dollars is actually millions and millions of dollars for hotel rooms. I actually stay here so long, I have to rent a house.
Oh.
And you know, just to do that, because to be in a hotel room for 2 weeks, carrying this much paperwork and so forth. And I have my assistant who's here assisting me with processing what we're doing here today. My daughter's flying in, so, yeah, you really do need a lot to come in here. But I actually, I know that the various cities use what the Arabian horse industry brings in to their city and includes it in their budget per year as far as the goodness of the
revenue.
Right, revenue to the city.
Yeah, it's clearly a big impact up here in Scottsdale. I mean, it really does bring a lot. I've heard that it's, you know, you got Barrett Jackson a few weeks before this, and then you've got this coming in, and it's, frankly, for Scottsdale, it's a really good thing to have this here every year.
And there are not, what really interesting, there's not many facilities in this country that could even accommodate a horse show this large. And so you really have a unique treasure here in Scottsdale with Westworld. And from an insurance company standpoint, I have to say that it's probably one of the safest facilities to bring a horse to an exhibit here. And that's one of the reasons why I really like it at this horse show, because they do things as much as even the footing in the ring, the different rings and the different disciplines. I mean, that they have horses working on different types of dirt depending on what they're doing. And that's very important. And the stalls that they've built here, it's really something to see if you've never been here.
Yeah.
It seems to be drawing a lot of people here, and especially I've noticed the crowds today are really a much higher than they have been over the last couple of days. And I like, as I walk through by the stables, by the different barns, there are people out talking to the public to tell them about the horse and to actually invite people to come up and pet the horse and talk about the Arabian being a very friendly horse and not a mean horse.
Right.
So I think that's really nice because people who really may see horses from afar or really don't have much experience get to come here and learn about the Arabians and get to touch them and see them, and they're just absolutely beautiful.
I get to do the same thing. Ask questions, yeah. Touch them, see them.
That'd be great.
Actually, when you're involved in horses, and they let us know, you know, who's going to – they'll do email blasts and so forth. Another – part of the business, and we can't wait to see the new superstars that are going to be out this year, or some of the yearlings that were born last year that will be competing this year. I mean, it's really thrilling. It really is.
Yeah, it's always interesting to see the yearlings compete because you just never know what they're going to do when they get in there. Almost.
Well, they're just babies.
Yeah.
And some of them will come in there and they'll just be like peacocks and show themselves off, and then the others are just a little bit timid, and it's really nice. And then you can notice traits about each individual horse is very close to what their pedigree is. So you would say, oh, I bet that's a horse. And so so you test yourself as well.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, he's one right now.
There you go.
Well, it sounds like we need to somehow figure out how to get you to open up out here so that you could have your Scottsdale office because you do so much here.
Well, actually, I would love that. That's something that's not out of the question.
Good. That's
great.
Thank you. Thank you for even saying that because it just verifies that it's definitely on my list.
Well, as I say, our coworker that's insured with you, one of the things that she told me that she likes so much about your company is when she's called there, they talk to her by name, and they treat her like she's a real customer, a real person, you know, like a number. And they say, well, it's so good to hear from you. How are you doing? What can we do for you today? Real customer service.
Well, thank you for that. I make sure that we don't have voicemail in my office. Believe it or not,
yeah.
We have a 24-hour live person answering the phone because horses do not get sick just during the day. They get sick at night and on holidays and weekends and so forth. And we pride ourselves on that because there's nothing more irritating for anyone is to have an animal injured in your hand and get somebody's voicemail. No, we're really very compassionate for the person because that's when you really need us.
Yeah, I think that's great. I hate getting voicemail, so I like to talk to a real person.
Well, give my office a call.
He's got to get the horse first.
Yeah,
then
yeah.
He'll give you a call.
Yeah.
He's been looking.
Yeah.
Well, how could you not?
Yeah, you look at it's funny. We were sitting here, and as the horses go by, everybody's saying, that's a beautiful horse. That's an even better horse. You know, everyone that goes by in this show, it's just amazing what's out here.
Well, actually, I'm looking at the one that they have in this wash rack, and that's pretty fancy, too.
Yeah, it's
beautiful.
Something. So.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm not a radio person, so I'm never sure when we're supposed to take breaks, so I'm going to have to ask about this.
Well, I always say it's up to you guys. If you want to keep going, we can, or if you want to take a little break right now, we can go ahead and do that.
Well, I know Kimberly's got a lot of stuff to do here, yeah. So maybe we ought to let her go and let her go on
more
get back
evaluating.
To the office. Absolutely. Yeah.
I can't thank you enough for including me in your radio show, and if there's anything that I can do to help in any way, feel free to give me a call.
We really appreciate you taking the time because we know you're busy. I see, since I've been out here a few days, I've been seeing you zipping around in this golf cart all over the place. So I know you're busy. But how do people get a hold of you or your company if they're, you know, into the business and they need to talk about getting insurance for the horses or the horse farm or whatever?
Well, the easiest way to contact us is to just Google us under JarvisInsurance.com, and that gives our phone numbers and all of our information. Our website's www.JarvisInsurance.com, and they can pick and choose who they want to speak to, and our answering service or the people at the office will catch you in or have us give you a call.
That's great. Well, we really appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Kim.
Thank you. Thank you.
Absolutely. A special thanks, Kimberly Jarvis with Jarvis Insurance Agency. And we'll be right back on Practical Business Solutions, broadcasting live from the Arabian Horse Show at Westworld.
Baum and Spean PC, we want to help you work on your business, not in your business. We take a simple approach. You know your business. Our firm gives you the information to make those decisions better. Our firm takes a proactive approach to your accounting needs, and if you look behind the numbers, you'll find there are hidden opportunities that we try to impart on you. Communication is the key to that understanding, and there is no charge for brief phone calls. Contact us at 602-266-5633 or email us at mitch@jfbpc.com. Birenbaum and Spean works to increase your understanding of your business in order to make the decisions necessary to move your business forward.
Weidenauer, Heinzen & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
Do you owe money to the IRS? Have you heard of possible payment options such as a partial payment installment agreement, offering compromise, or not currently collectible status? Knowing that you have options and what those options are will greatly relieve your worry and stress. Hi, my name is Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor. If you are curious as to what options may be available to you if you owe money to the IRS, my 25 years experience as a CPA may very well help you in these times of uncertainty. Stop worrying and start learning about what options you have. If you just want to talk to someone about your IRS debt or want specific advice, I invite you to call me at 602-625-3074. That is 602-625-3074. And when you call, ask for me, Dave Isaac, CPA and former government tax auditor.
Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a multi-practice law firm, ideally equipped to assist with a broad range of legal and business issues, corporate and financial transactions, real estate, commercial, litigation, bankruptcy, and private client practice. Weidenauer, Heinten & Lewis is a law firm that bases its practice on understanding the businesses of their clients, and they use this insight to meet each client's unique and evolving legal challenges. Call or click today, 602-254-9900. Find them on the web at rhkl-law.com.
And welcome back again. You are listening to Breakthrough Thinking live here in Scottsdale, Arabian Horse Show at Westworld. This has just been amazing, Mr. Jim Hyten, hasn't it?
Yes, it is.
I mean, your guests have been fantastic. And we have one more guest, Terry Shatta. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
You're more than welcome, and I'm going to send it back to you, Jim.
Okay, thank you. Well, Terry, we're glad that you could stop by today. We wanted to talk to somebody about performance horses out here at the show. And I've got my partner Zora with me, and we're both with the law firm. And one of the things I want to ask everybody that comes on the show is just how they got involved in the business and exactly what your business is.
Well, I've been involved in Arabian show horses for about 30 years, a little over 30 years. I started showing when I was about 10 years old, and now I just gave up my amateur status this last year, so I'm here with my husband with our training horses. We have about 20-plus training horses back in Nebraska. We brought four here to show. We do mostly English horses ourselves, although I've competed in almost every division that there is in the performance. So
tell us the different divisions in the performance horses.
So there are working classes, and there are also the performance classes. The working Western classes, I've done the reining. I've won it here at Scottsdale a couple times. And then there's also, in the performance division, there's Hunter, Western Pleasure, and English Pleasure. And the difference between the two, Hunter and the English Pleasure, the Hunter, you're going to see the people in the tall field boots with the tight and the short jackets and the hard hats looking like they're going to take a fence, although they never jump a fence, they never catch a fox. We just ride around and show our horses at their different gates. The saddle seat English Pleasure is more of a flat seat saddle. They wear a derby, long coats, usually matching jodhpur pants, tie. So it looks like a three-piece suit, basically, with a derby. And then the Western horses, obviously, big Western saddle, chaps. And nowadays it's so glitzy. The tops are very shiny and pretty. Of course, the men still wear normally a plain white shirt with a pretty tie and a Western cowboy hat. So,
Okay, now this is something I've always wanted to have somebody explain to me. The difference in park horses versus English versus country, I mean, is there a difference between all those?
There is a difference. I think first and foremost the difference is going to be the manners. A park horse is going to be hotter. Not only are they allowed more mistakes probably, or to be a little bit more on the edge because their motion is going to be so extreme. They don't necessarily have to do a flat foot walk and look like they're relaxed, but they do need to have an animated trot and a big, big rolling canter. The English horses, they are forgiven a little bit for their mistakes if they don't flat foot walk or if they maybe don't pick up a canter right away. They have a big trot, pretty animated, and a good canter and a walk. And they're supposed to look more like a pleasure to ride. The park horse, you know, they're working hard. They're using every ounce of energy they have to push themselves around the arena and get every little last bit of motion out there. The country horses is a great division. It's been around maybe for 20 years, and it was for the horses initially that didn't trot quite as high. That's not necessarily true these days.
Yeah.
They trot pretty big, but it's very easy, very pleasant, looks very comfortable, looks like you could do it all day long. They do have to flat foot walk. They have to walk on a loose rein. They have to stop. They have to back. They have to stand. Manners are very, very important in the country class.
Wow. At park horses, when I've seen them, they look like they're really churning. I mean,
they are.
And the riders look like they're really working with those horses.
For sure, definitely. Lots of energy coming out on both ends, the rider and the horse, working their most.
Now, what area do you particularly concentrate on?
We do mostly English horses, so the country and the English Pleasure. We have a few park horses. I have been national champion in English, country, Hunter, Western, reining, saddle seat equitation.
Wow.
So I've been around the block a few times.
Yeah.
And what took you from the amateur status?
My husband just moved to Nebraska in the last 2 years, and they have – because he's a trainer and we get paid and we have just started our own business, I am not allowed to help our amateurs that ride with us at all, because they pay us money. And so me sitting on the rail myself and saying, good job, or you need to do this, or you need to do that, even though I've been in the business for over 20 years, is against the rules. So I gave up my amateur status so I could help. It's just too hard to start a new business and not be able to participate in it to my full extent.
Is that a state rule?
That is a rule. The Arabian Horse Association is also governed by the United States Equestrian Federation. It's the United States Equestrian Federation rule. So any breed has that.
What's the name of your business in Nebraska?
McCarty LTD.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
And it is a training center. It is. It's a training center. And so with giving it my amateur status, we've started a lesson program trying to bring new people into the breed in the Nebraska area. I grew up showing in Nebraska, and it was a big deal back when I was a child. But there really are no training facilities in Nebraska that participate on a national level except for ours. So trying to bring some newbies into this business.
Very cool. Now, you said you yourself have 11 training horses. Was that what I heard?
We have 20. 20, yes.
Mm-hmm. And what does a training horse do?
Well, the training horses come from, we have clients from all over, as do most of the barns that are here. It's not just that we only take horses from the Nebraska area. We have people that are from Texas and Oklahoma. And then we obviously do have some people from the surrounding area. So they pay a monthly fee for their horse to come in and get worked every day or 5 or 6 days a week and, get ready to go show. And then they come to shows and show. So.
And that's what we see out here in these arenas.
Right.
Right.
So it's a bit, it is a business. People say, oh, that's so fun. You get to ride horses every day. Well, it is fun, and we love it, but it is also our business. And so, regardless of rain or shine or, unfortunately, negative 25-degree weather, we're at the farm.
Right. Well, then you probably have to deal with the expectations of the owners, too. Whether they're large or small or whatever they are.
Right. And even if you have people that, it's hard to take somebody from the beginning to the end and kind of show them the process. And, it doesn't just happen overnight. It does take a while. So.
Yeah.
How long do the horses usually stay at your facility?
We have horses that have been there the whole time since my husband moved to Nebraska, so for a year and a half. We have some people that have brought horses in for training, and then they take them home over the winter months for 2 or 3 months for what they, deem vacation, and they get turned outside, and they get to run around and act like a normal horse and, grow their hair out and play. The baby horses, when they come in as like a 3-year-old, we usually try to keep them in training full-time for at least a full year so that they've learned the basics and are ready to go show, and then they can have a little bit of time off here or there. So.
And then in showing the performance horse, there's a professional and amateur classes?
There is.
Okay, so they are divided in that class.
They are. The amateur can show in the open classes with the trainers, but depending on who's judging, usually, they try to really keep that separate. They don't really want to have an amateur go and beat a professional on a professional, at a level like that. So normally the amateurs all stay in their amateur classes and the trainers all go in the trainer classes.
Okay. Well, I know we're coming up to the end of the show here. They keep holding up fingers, and I'm trying to make sure I know how many minutes
I didn't
there
do
are
very good at math. Yeah. I hope I help. Good at fingers. Okay. 4 minutes.
But it's really interesting because the halter classes, I see people, it's interesting. It's very beautiful and everything. The performance classes really get the audience going when they're, the horses are being ridden, whether they're, park or English. I mean, they just seem like the audiences really get into that performance.
Sure, it's lots of fun to watch, and especially at this level here in Scottsdale, you get some of the best horses from around the country and internationally, too, on the halter level. So it's fun to come and watch them at the beginning of the year and see how wonderful they are, and then go to Tulsa in the fall and see who's made it to nationals and who's going to win and say, I saw that one in Scottsdale. I knew it was going to be a winner.
Okay. Well, I'm going to
Dave, you're holding up my fingers. So okay.
That's right. This has been the most exciting 3 hours I think we've ever had on the radio, Tim.
I think so.
I mean, well, the guests, phenomenal.
Well, we always ask people, how do people, if they decide they want to be, you know, that they want their horses trained by you, how do they get a hold of you? What's your contact information?
My personal contact information is McCartyLTD@gmail.com, you know, or we're on Facebook, so you can contact us either way.
That's great. That's great.
And that's McCarty, so yes, LTD@gmail.com, 2 C's. Excellent.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. It's been a real pleasure and honor. This is beautiful out here. We encourage all listeners to get out here.
And she did such a great job on just being, you know, kind of asked to come over and talk about performance horses. And in a few minutes, we got kind of the whole spectrum of how performance horses are categorized and everything. So
very cool.
Very good. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
You can always hear a replay of this whole broadcast on BreakRadioShow.com. Go to Archives under Practical Business Solutions, and there is the complete broadcast. So if you have a card, I'll send you a link to it as
great.
Well. So this was great. Thank you so much. Right now are Heighton and Lewis. Jim, Zora, thank you so much. And thank you to all the guests we've had today.
Oh, great show.
It's
a lot of good guests.
Really cool. And we'd like to come out here again next year. I'm looking forward to it. Anyway, this is Breakthrough Thinking Broadcasting Network, and we'll be back, of course, tomorrow with Breakthrough Sports. Have a great evening. Get out here. Westworld, Catsdale, Raven Horse Show, fantastic, and signing off.